Welcome to another edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Bubba, we're about to meet a fascinating man. Dave Hanna is, he's been around, his story's incredible. It's one of our favorite topics, sports. And we'll unpack, Dave, of course, has been part of Athletes in Action. We'll talk about history's handful, ambassadors of compassion. He is a fellow radio host. As a matter of fact, host of Great Moments in Sports and actually played a little ball, Bubba. He's the pride of Alden, Iowa, and spent some time on scholarship at Oklahoma State, played for the Rams, had an injury, and then holds some unofficial world records in weightlifting. So
he's been around.
Yeah, but other than that, there's not a lot to talk about with Dave. Dave Hanna, welcome to Rick and Bubba University, the podcast.
We're glad to be with you guys.
Well, I was talking with an acquaintance of yours that I am in Sunday school with, and I was hearing your story and all the things you have been involved in. But I knew pretty quick, as it was suggested, you'd be a great podcast topic. So let's talk a little bit about. Did I say that right? That you're is it Alden, Iowa, or Alden, Iowa?
No, it's Alden, Iowa.
Alden, Iowa. So that's where you grew up. Where do you live now?
I live in Southern California.
Oh, Dave. I mean, from Iowa to Southern California. And I guess, was it the Rams that brought you to Southern California? Is that how that started?
Yeah, I did. Football helped me a lot. I grew up in this little town in Alden, Iowa, and people say, where is that? And I just tell them it's between Buckeye and Popejoy.
So, Dave, this all started early on. It looks like you were quite the high school athlete, and you were selected All-State in four sports. Wow. Is that correct?
No, I guess so. That's right. And I played four sports. In a little tiny town, you had to play four sports because there weren't enough kids otherwise. And fortunately, I was a pretty good athlete. And for some reason, Oklahoma State University heard about me about 650 miles south. And they scouted me one football game and one basketball game. And fortunately, I didn't know they were scouting me. I'd have probably choked. But it turns out I played probably the best two games of my life in each sport. So they thought I was worth a scholarship. We didn't have any game films in those days, so they had to go with what they saw. And so they offered me a football and a basketball scholarship. And I figured football was my best shot. So anyway, I went to Oklahoma State, had a great 4 years. Of course, I played back when you went both ways. And that was a long time ago. Freshmen weren't eligible when I played. So I had three good varsity years and ended up coming out with the Los Angeles Rams. Football got me out of that cold Iowa weather and worked my way south and then west.
Dave, I'm curious. I'm going to say I bet three of your sports were football, basketball, and baseball. What was the fourth?
Track.
So what did you do in track? Throw something heavy?
Well, actually, I ran the 120-yard high hurdles. I gave the opening of the 440. I ran the first leg of the 440 relay. I did the high jump, and in Iowa – years ago, they had the javelin. Well, somebody threw a javelin one time and killed a coach.
What?
So they shifted the javelin throw to the football throw. Football throw and high jump, and then I ran two events.
So somebody threw the javelin and killed a coach?
Yep.
Dave,
that can happen.
That's not funny, but it sounds like something out of a movie.
It does. Well, that'll turn into the football throw at that point.
It will.
So tell us then. You do well in college. You've done great in high school. Obviously, athletics is a foundation of your life. Then you get an opportunity to play professional football, and I know it was a different league then with the Los Angeles Rams. Tell us what happened with the Rams.
Actually, maybe to go back to my personal story a little bit. My junior year at Oklahoma State, I became a believer in Christ, and he dramatically changed my life. Being a football player and being well-known on the campus, I got pretty active in trying to have an impact in the lives of students, which is kind of an interesting story that leads to Athletes in Action a little bit later on. But with that beginning and that good start, I decided that I was going to join campus crusade staff, or as they call crew staff, right now. And so I told the remember that's when we had the two separate leagues, the NFC or NFL and the AFL. And so I told both leagues, look, don't waste a draft on me because I'm going to go into Christian work. But I never lost my desire to play. And so 2 years later, I ended up signing with the Rams. And all of that was actually to be a part of starting and launching Athletes in Action. So let me stop there for a second.
So but with the Rams, it was something, though, that you did have an injury that cut your time there short, right?
Yeah, actually, I was injured before I came to camp. Tore the ligaments between my legs, and they were giving me cortisone shots every day between my legs, which was kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it was George Allen's first year as a head coach of the Rams, and he wanted me to go to a team in the Continental League and then come back when I was healthy. And so I felt like, you know, my calling was to start Athletes in Action. And if I hadn't been healed at that point in time, maybe I ought to focus my energies there. Now, years later, George Allen and I worked on trying to bring an NFL team to Memphis, Tennessee, which we obviously didn't get it there, but I got to know George pretty well years later.
So let's talk about Athletes in Action. You're involved in a number of things. So you've told us the foundation of that started with you coming to be a follower of Christ your junior year at Oklahoma State. You went into the league, and what how did that start? And let the audience know that may have never heard of it. What does Athletes in Action, what's the goal? What does it do? How does it work?
Well, Athletes in Action now is in, I don't know, 160, 170 countries of the world. In the days that I ran Athletes in Action, we were putting together athletic teams, for example. The whole purpose of Athletes in Action was to give athletes a chance to come to faith in Christ, and then in the end result, to use their platform of sports to share their faith. So we had the Athletes in Action basketball team. That team played we played major colleges, 30 games every year against major colleges. Our guys were college graduates. And back in those days, we almost became a household name, but that was back until about the end of the 80s before changes occurred in the NCAA rules. And during that period of time, we beat the Russian Olympic team 5 times, represented the United States at the World Championship. So as the Orange County Register that used to follow us out here in Southern California, they'd say, they beat you up in the first half, they share the gospel with you the second half, and or at halftime, and they beat you up in the second half. You guys can appreciate this being believers, but in the early days, we had good teams, but not great teams. It took a while to get there. And so when we would lose at first, they would say, well, what do you expect? They're Christians. Then after we started beating all the top teams, they said, what do you expect? They're pros. So the whole issue is the way people look at it. I remember John Wooden. You guys would probably remember that name. Still mm-hmm. probably the greatest basketball coach, and certainly in college history. And I used to get together with him pretty regularly. And I remember this was after he won like his 4th national championship. And we were still trying to figure out how to get our basketball team to the top. So I'm talking to John, and I said, how can we build a team that can beat you? And John said, you can't. and at that point, I could understand. But he said, Dave, I got 3 pieces of advice I can give you. Number one, you need a better coach. Well, I kind of figured that one out. But when John said it, then I realized I needed to. Secondly, you got to have better talent. And third, you got to hire one of the refs. And so that one caught my attention, because the other two, I understood that. I said, explain this to me, John. He said, well, look, your game is an exhibition game. It doesn't count on their schedule, but the coaches obviously want to win that game. And so what happens at the college ranks, for a referee to become a conference referee, they have to get approved by, you know, coaches, I guess. So those referees want to become a referee in the conference. So if it's a close game, Dave, you'll never win them, because those referees are wanting to please the coach. Well, I didn't know that, okay, at the time.
Right.
So I said, well, will the coaches agree to it? And he said, yeah, I think so. So we built it in the contract. Those were the days you had two refs. So we would hire one and they hired one, and we would simply hire a good referee from a different conference. So it wasn't their own. And I could give you some interesting stories, but I'm not sure I want to name names here.
But you're saying it was good advice from coach. It did work.
Yeah. And all three things happened. First of all, we did get a new coach, a top coach. We did recruit some of the top players. You wouldn't remember him now, but Ralph Drollinger played for John Wooden at UCLA, and he was 7 2¾ center. And he was one of our key players when we beat the Russian Olympic team the five times that we played him and beat him. And so it was quite an experience. And then we traveled all over the world. You know, we played the Chinese Olympic team in China. And they actually let us talk about our faith. Now, I don't know what the translator said.
But right, that's right. True.
But in English, we did share the gospel, okay?
All right, when we come back, I want to ask you some questions about this, the organization. You know, obviously, you've given us the history of it, but also some of the messages that you were talking about. And also talk about, you know, some of the things we see now in athletics and the state of athletics when we come back on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Our guest today on Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, Dave Hanna, he has quite the story and started Athletes in Action, also History's Handful, Ambassadors of Compassion, has his own radio show, Great Moments in Sports. It's on 200 stations nationwide, and was a standout athlete in high school, college, was with the Rams, got injured during camp, went on to unofficially exceed 14 world records in weightlifting. But you mentioned about Athletes in Action before the break, and you talked about this exhibition basketball team you guys had, and that a lot of people that covered you would say they beat you up in the first half, they present the gospel at halftime, then they beat you up again in the second half. And then if you guys lost, they would say, well, what do you expect? It's a bunch of Christians. And then if you won, you'd say, what do you expect? They're all pros. I want to take on that, and I know this is at the heart of what you're doing too, and Bubba and I both know that men's ministry is so, so crucial, and we spend a lot of time and have even put together a discipleship strategy for men. But one of the things that you run into a lot is that we, I think, have allowed followers of Christ to be portrayed. The Bible does not portray them this way, but especially the males, that somehow they're passive people. Men are not really drawn to it because they think, well, Jesus has also been portrayed as a hippie. And I think a lot of times men are not drawn to the faith, especially being serious about their faith and immersing themselves in the church, is because incorrectly they perceive it as this means they're going to become these passive, pushover feminine men. And of course that's not biblically correct. But speak to that a little bit, because I know this is something that you've been portraying and dealing with as well.
Well, those were big issues, especially back in the days when I started Athletes in Action, because I would share with different people, and they said, well, you know, athletes, they're ungodly. They play on Sunday. Why would you spend your time with athletes? Well, I just knew I was called, number one, to do that. And then number two, it turned out as we got started, there were a lot of Christian athletes. But in those days, the attitude was kind of like, if you were a Christian, you had to be a sissy, you had to be a weakling. And hey, if you played football, you know, or you wrestled, you were a really tough guy. So it was, they just viewed Christianity sort of like you're saying, incorrectly. What happened is in the early days, fairly early into this, a gentleman named Dr. Ira Eshelman started chapel services with NFL teams. And then he and I started talking. He said, man, we need chaplains. So just so you know this, I put the first group of chaplains, about 12 guys that worked for me in Athletes in Action, became the very first chaplains with all the NFL teams. And of course, as you know, all the pro teams have chaplains today in virtually all sports, and it's grown all over the world. So all of a sudden, first of all, the coaches were saying, Christians, they're what about them? You know, they're weak. They're not going to be tough. Then what happened is some of their top athletes became believers, and they saw that they improved their athletic performance. They didn't get in trouble. They didn't have near the problems, and the whole attitude toward Christianity and sports began to change. And of course, I think it's continued over the years. For example, one of the groups that was huge for us and continues to be huge was wrestling. Since I went to Oklahoma State, all the years I was at Oklahoma State was undefeated, national champ all 4 years in wrestling. So I never wrestled because they didn't have it available in my town, but I became a great wrestling fan. And then we started wrestling kind of early on, and that's how I met Steve. He joined one of our wrestling teams. And today, Athletes in Action wrestlers are continue to impact the whole world. And so I think the whole attitude, at least in the sports world, of being a Christian and being a great athlete has completely changed, because you have so many great athletes today that are strong, solid believers. And so it's exciting to kind of see what's developed. But when we first started, the attitude was pretty much that way. And in the early days, we'd win maybe 50 to 60% of our games. And then we had a string in there of about 120 basketball games, and we lost one game and playing all the games on the road. So I think that I can't say, because I've been away from the sports for a while, but I ran AIA for the first 22 years. And then my boss, Bill Bright, who was the founder of Crew, or Campus Crusader Crew, challenged me to take the responsibility to try to raise $1 billion so we could take the Jesus film to the world. So I sort of shifted from sports, and I haven't been in sports as directly, although right now I'm working with coaches all over the country with our Ambassador Compassion program.
I wanted to ask you some specific stuff, though. He mentioned Steve. He's talking about Steve Gadosh, who been a very decorated wrestling coach and is a friend of mine, and actually coached one of my sons early on, and that's how I got introduced to Dave Hanna. So, but Dave, he was telling me some of the things that, if you had advice to say parents today, because there's all kinds of confusion out there about my kid is wanting to enter into sports, and it's almost become now that if I haven't hired a specialist for my kid, and my kid's not involved in some travel league and traveling all over the place and playing tournaments every weekend, of course, sadly, a lot of times on Sunday, and he doesn't have a coach that teaches him this and a coach that teaches him that we're paying for on the side, then my child has no chance to develop as an athlete. Do you see this trend as something positive, something negative, or do you have any advice for parents that want their kids to be able to maximize their God-given athletic ability?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would say this is the world we live in today. For example, you got a quarterback just kind of little school down the road from you, University of Alabama, right? And with the new rules, the new NIL rules, if I remember right, don't hold me to the exact figures, but I think he was getting $8 million before he'd actually started his first game, last year. And one of the coaches, the high school coaches that I work with out here, actually coached Bryce in his freshman year and then coached him all 4 years on 7-on-7. And the truth is, college, I don't know how it's going to go in college football with all the new rules. It used to be, if you were giving money to players, that was under the table, and you got penalized if they caught you.
Right.
Yeah. Everything is changing in sports. So it used to be you got to work really hard. And if your kid has 4 good years or 2 or 3 good years of college, she can make a lot of money. Now, this actual coach that coached Bryce, his quarterback this year signed it at the University of Tennessee, and he's getting $8 million from whatever company's paying him that money. So here's a kid right out of high school getting $8 million just like Bryce did. And it's going to happen everywhere. So if you think there's been pressure in the past to put your kid in a deal to get there, now 2 or 3 years earlier, your kid can make millions of dollars. You tell me what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not pretty, and that I think that's only going to add to the pressure. Maybe you know, at first you just wanted your kid to be able to play college. Now you're thinking, well, my kid might be able to make good money.
Well, and now that the money's in it, you think, hey, Junior can pay the house off.
So now
it becomes an investment, not just a plan to play sports.
Yeah, so now you're going to have all these organizations popping up, and I think some of them are good. Don't misunderstand me, but now can you imagine the organizations popping up? We're not just saying come to us and we'll get your kid a Division I scholarship. Now it's going to be come to us and we can find a way for your kid to make millions of dollars playing college football or baseball or whatever.
Yeah, I think the dust is yet to settle on that. The NCAA, I wish, had got out in front of this, but unfortunately they didn't. And, you know, we're free market people. We think that some of that is good, but it's like so many things, what starts out good can sometimes get out of control, and the NCAA's kind of lost control of it now, so we don't know where it's going to go.
Well, and we don't. And I think you've got a lot of good people that are going to work on it, you know. So let's hope that, you know, they can manage it and control it. It's just that they didn't make the decision to open that up, but now it's open, and there's been a lot of argument on, hey, these kids work hard and the schools make a lot of money on them. So I can understand the argument on both sides, but I think a lot of this is to be seen, because parents are going to be pushed more than ever. You know, for example, when I was playing football, when I signed with the Rams, the number one draft pick got $50,000. That was his salary. And, you know, they paid me what I would call back then some good money to play with the Rams. But the kind of money that people made there was nothing. It's just incomparable compared to what they're getting paid today. And so the emphasis of sports has changed a lot. It's a lot tougher, and parents are doing all they can to give their kid a chance. Now, you got a lot of parents. We work with a lot of schools that would be, you know, maybe in the tougher area, and these kids don't have the same – their parents don't have the money to give them the same opportunities, but they're going to face those a lot of those same issues, you know, and so – I guess we'll just have to see where it goes.
What do you think? Can we get to the point? Like, I remember when my kids were playing, and that wasn't that long ago. I mean, my kids, my youngest is 21, so it wasn't that long ago. And you had, I'm just going to use baseball for an example. You had, you know, your local baseball for youth.
Yeah.
Okay. And everybody would go play, and it would be fun. It would be competitive. But the kids still then got home, you know, to ride the bicycle and play in the creek and, you know, have a balanced life. And so, but then travel ball comes in, and then you start getting that, well, my kid's not very good if he's not on travel ball team, you know. And then the you've seen in some communities where the baseball for youth, the Dizzy Dean or whatever you called it, what, you know, is almost vanishing because if it's travel ball or nothing. And so I want to come back, and I want to ask you a question because I've seen it happen. You know, are we setting up an environment where even some kids that maybe had some ability and could do well, by the time they get to where it actually matters, they want no part of it anymore?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that when we come back with Dave Hanna, our guest today on Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. All right, so Bubba, let's talk Tommy John.
And we're not talking about the elbow surgery.
Did you just get you some new Tommy John?
I did.
Yeah. And
matter of fact, us talking about it reminded me I needed to get some more.
Yeah. And we love Tommy John and the products that they put out. I mean, and with the heat wave that is upon us, and I know it's affecting a lot of people. Is there anybody in the country that's not doing the heat right?
Well, we got it worse than everybody.
Yeah, we do. The Tommy John underwear is designed to keep us cool. And you might be thinking, well, Rick, how in the world does it do that? It just doesn't make you feel cooler. You actually are cooler, up to 7 degrees cooler than cotton. And this is one you might want to look at, Tommy John's Apollo underwear, because it really does, in the way it handles the body sweating and all that, it's designed for you to stay dry and to stay cool. 17 million pairs have been sold. There's no risk because you're covered with Tommy John's best pair you ever wear, or it's free guarantee. So if you're out there in the summer heat, you could be much cooler if you would just go to the breathable, lightweight fabric, four times the stretch of the competing brands, comfort innovations. You look and feel cool. You look great and you feel cool the whole season, even if you're outside or maybe you're just lounging around the house. So why don't you be like us and enjoy Tommy John? Go to TommyJohn.com/RickBubba right now. And save 20% off the first order. That's 20% off right now at TommyJohn.com/RickBubba. Again, TommyJohn.com/RickBubba. See the site for all the details. Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, we are chatting with Dave Hanna. Dave Hanna has been working in sports and around sports for years and years and years, and is now still working with coaches and has a little bit of everything going on. He actually was part of starting Athletes in Action, Campus Crusade for Christ. So I asked the question when we were going to that break, with all this pressure we're seeing now with the NIL, and it's always been pressure, you know, that your kid gets to big time college and maybe to be a pro, and we know the odds of that are not all that high. My concern, Dave, is are we creating an environment where these sports aren't fun anymore for children?
Well, I would say certainly. It's not just a game to play and enjoy. It's a lifestyle, and the parents, if they're really hoping that their child will end up in the NFL or pro baseball or pro basketball or any of the other sports now, and there's so many that are developing, they're pressuring their kids. And it's interesting because we work what I do now with Ambassadors of Compassion. We're dealing with a tremendous anxiety, mental health issues, suicide tendencies among kids. And if you see to suicides, the tendency out here, well, all over the country, is you got the starting quarterback making 4-point grade average and he kills himself.
Right.
Or the girl that's the cheerleader, she's on the soccer team and making good grades and real popular and kills herself. Well, why are kids that are some of our most successful high school kids taking their lives? And every year now, over 2 million kids, according to the National Alliance on Mental Health, said over 2 million kids are attempting suicide every year. Now, most don't succeed, but about 750,000 end up in the hospitals of those that try and don't succeed. So it's a huge issue. And this was all pre-COVID. It's grown dramatically since then. So with that, why are kids that are the most successful taking their lives? And I've talked to a number of parents who have lost a child to suicide, and none of them had the foggiest idea. But I think it's because maybe sometimes without realizing it, parents put this tremendous pressure on their kids. If you think about it, if you want to go to a certain university, you can't make any mistakes or you'll never get there. If you want to be a star and make a fortune, you can't make any mistakes. So a lot of these kids feel this incredible pressure that you're describing, and the solution they've come up with is to take their life.
Dave, being a little older now, you look back and you think about the things that we felt pressure from growing up and how important sports could be. You know, having friends, having, you know, people to date and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, it seemed extremely important. Maybe you got your heart broke by a female or something. But as you get older, you realize it just wasn't that important. Even though then it seemed like it was a monumental mountain to climb, now you realize how silly and how passing some of that was.
Well, no, I think as you get older, you do look at it differently. You know, I never pushed my sons into sports hard. Now, my oldest son, Eric, who I work with now on a regular basis because he and I are doing Ambassador Compassion, he did get a full scholarship, started as a freshman at the University of Colorado. Unfortunately, he was in a car accident and he was in the back seat, but he ended up having to have back surgery, came back pretty well, had won the starting job. And then again, the doctor said he couldn't play because of his back. So he was a member of the national championship Colorado team, but he didn't play that year. But there's just a lot of pressure that didn't exist when I was playing. You know, when I was playing, you had to have an off-season job. You know, nowadays in the pro world, you don't have an off-season job. You just do the sport all year round, right? But you didn't make enough money in those days. And then you think about it, you want to think of the pressure is because now all the entities are out there and they're telling the school, here's the top 300 best football players or best basketball players. You know, I would have never made that because they wouldn't go down and check a little town like mine. So in today's world, I'm sure I would have never gotten a college scholarship, but I was able to get it then because they were out looking for people and they didn't, you know, and nobody was keeping track of all of them. So there is so much pressure in sports today that didn't exist a few years ago. Now, how is it going to turn out? I don't know. You know, human beings generally are pretty resilient, and that's what we're struggling with more. Today's world, kids are less resilient than they've ever been. And that's what our whole program exists to try to help build resiliency, deal with mental health issues. And I work with coaches all over the country, and I can tell you story after story of the struggles that are going on today. Will they last? You know, will life go back to normal if and when we ever get past COVID? Or is there going to be another COVID come along? I don't know the answers to any of those, but our kids are in a far worse situation now than they've ever been in any stage of my life. I've never seen a time where it's this difficult for kids.
Dave, I want to ask you too, and shift gears just a little bit before we run out of time, because I know that it's getting away from us. Tell us about your radio show.
Well, I haven't done that for quite a while.
Well, when it was on, though, tell us about what was that all about?
It was a fascinating show. I don't know, short show. It was like a 15-minute daily show, and I was on 300 or 400 stations. And this was years ago when I was still running Athletes in Action. So we took great moments of sports and we would tell the story, you know, and then we would go into there in a little bit of a personal side. So I had some incredible stories and I used to tell, you know, for example, the name Fielding Yost probably doesn't mean anything to you today, but Fielding Yost was one of Michigan's great head football coaches and they were playing their arch rival, Ohio State, mm-hmm. in Columbus, Ohio, you know, right before Thanksgiving. And of course, this was a long, long time ago. So he brought his team back in and he gave one of his fiery pep talks, you know, and he said, "Now, mighty men of Michigan, go out that door to victory." And his players charged out the door that Coach Yost pointed to. The problem was that door didn't lead to the football field, but it led to the swimming pool. That's a true story.
Oh, no.
Are you kidding?
No, that's a true story.
They didn't get wet, did they?
They not only got wet because the guys were charging out, and usually the first, you know, your starters were first, and it was like two steps, you know, when you're in the pool.
Right.
On those days, they didn't have fancy locker rooms or anything like they had today, right? So about a half the team, including all your starters, end up in the pool. And it's a freezing cold day in Columbus, Ohio. And, of course, they didn't have extra uniforms. They didn't have anything in those days. So that mighty team of Michigan went out there to defeat. So that's just an example of one story. And I haven't told that one for a long time, but that's it.
I didn't even know it. When you were doing the show, all I can think of in the world of podcasts now, somebody needs to find those archives.
I know.
And it needs to be on some sort of podcast where you can go and access all those shows you did.
No, I have them. They're amazing stories. For example, what football team swam for a touchdown? It happened to be in the annual battle between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, which is where I went to school. And this, of course, was a long time ago. And the football field was an open field, and there was a little bit of a river or a creek about 7 or 8, 9 yards behind the goalpost. And in those days, they didn't have a 10-yard end. It was just kind of open.
Right.
And Oklahoma State guy punted, and they blocked the punt, and it rolled back into the end zone, rolled into that creek, and an Oklahoma guy ran back there, jumped into that water, swam out, and recovered the ball for a touchdown.
Yeah, I wish this show was still on. Dave, you got to find these archives. So, I mean, we got to hear these.
You know what the longest touchdown run in college football history was?
No, I don't.
Remember, I'm telling you this, and I haven't told it for a while, but it was in the annual battle between Lafayette and Lehigh University. And I forget now which one. Let's say Lehigh was ahead 6-0. We're in the end of the ball game. They've got the ball and they're driving down, or Lafayette's driving down to score the touchdown to win the game. And they're down around the 5 or 6 yard line, and they hand the ball off, and the guy rolls to the right and he gets hit once, twice, three times, spinning around, and all of a sudden breaks loose and starts running for a touchdown in the wrong direction.
No.
So now he's running, you know, 95 yards down the field in the wrong direction, and his teammates are running behind him, hollering at him, he's running the wrong way. And finally, just as he runs into the other end zone, he realizes what he's done. So now he turns around, and his teammates have been chasing him. So now they become a blocking wall, and he dodges and weaves his way all the way back into the other end zone for the winning touchdown.
So what was
so,
the
195 yards?
195 yards?
Well, about 200 yards, I guess, if you figure it out. Pretty close to 200-yard run, you know, you get one touchdown. Well, I mean, I gave you three stories, and I haven't even thought about those stories in the last 20 years, so I'm glad I pretty well remembered it.
Well, being radio guys, we saw that your time in radio and definitely wanted to find out, and it did produce some gold. We'll be back. Dave Hanna is our guest when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, continues. All right, so we talked about this on the show, the big show that runs Monday through Friday all over the country, this very, very big problem, and that is, where in the world do I go to try to find products that I have to have that doesn't compromise the things that I hold dear?
Getting harder and harder.
Well, I have good news. I want to point you to Patriot Mobile. PatriotMobile.com/RickBubba, or you can call them at 972 Patriot. Now, free speech, religious liberty, the Second Amendment. I mean, we were talking about the attacks on these things almost daily. The constitutional rights are under constant attack. It seems to get worse, but this is a good reason for you to support Patriot Mobile. They're not just America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider. They're one of the few companies that are fighting back. They offer the same nationwide coverage as the major carriers, so you get the same great service, plus the peace of mind that your money is combating the left's attempt to silence you. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer service. Patriot Mobile shares the values and supports the organizations that you love, the ones that are fighting for religious freedom, constitutional rights, and the sanctity of life. And of course, the veterans and first responders, they're heroes, and they get even bigger discounts. So get free activation with the offer code RickBubba. Offer code RickBubba, and remember, veterans and first responders, we're getting you even a little more. So go now. You do have a choice, and you don't have to compromise the quality of the coverage. Go to patriotmobile.com/RickBubba. Dave Hanna is our guest on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, and he has done a little bit of everything. We talked about athletes in action. We talked about now great moments in sports. And from 1990 to 2003, you had leadership in history's handful, and this was raising money like you were talking about. You mentioned it in passing. But the money you were asked to raise, which was $1 billion, the goal was to try to get the gospel to every single person on planet Earth?
By the year 2000, that was the goal. In other words, if we could raise $1 billion, we thought we could take the Jesus film,
right,
which now is in over, I don't know, 1,500 languages. And we could document by the end of the year 2000, we obviously didn't get to the 6 billion people, but we probably could document 4 billion people that have seen the Jesus film all over the world. In other words, I mean, literally we would take a mule with a projector and a power source and literally go to the tribes all over the world. So we went everywhere, television all over the world. We did national television in Russia during that time. Amazing. So I then oversaw the fundraising, and we partnered a lot with the Jesus film itself. And together with all of our efforts, we raised over $1 billion during that period of time. And we were able to demonstrate that about 4 billion people had seen the Jesus film. Of course, we still did all the other things, AIA and all the other things we were doing as well, campus and ministry all over the world.
Well, and now, as you mentioned, since 2004, you've been full-time in Ambassadors of Compassion. And you mentioned that, but I kind of want to wrap it up because landing there, because there's a lot that you guys are doing. And one of the things is, back to these goals again, is to reach 1 million students by 2024. And you talked about some of the problems that you are seeing, but what are some other things that Ambassadors of Compassion do? I see here there's a food distribution with Tyson Foods, and tell us exactly what goes on in the organization comprehensively.
No. Yeah, thank you. That's what we're doing now. Let me explain. It's very important because we work in public schools all across the country. Our program is taught during school hours. And so our program is a non-political, non-religious organization that takes real life principles in. And our goal is to help really build resiliency and mental health and leadership back into our kids. And when I was growing up, I think most every parent thought it was their job to teach kids life values. So schools, if you think about it, in those days focused on reading, writing, arithmetic, and other things along that line. And I think what's occurred is our world has gone along now. Parents will put in the hands of their kids when they're 2 or 3 years old, you know, a cell phone or a pad to keep the kind of quiet the kids down. And the kids now live on that. So they're getting their information from social media. Now, you still got plenty of good families that are doing it, but I think greater and greater parents are not teaching real life skills to their kids. What do you have to do if you're going to be successful in life? How do you actually become resilient? And one of the guys I work with, Michael Bounds, who was the lawyer in charge of the University of Alabama systems for a number of years, he ran all three. He ran the board of trustees for all three University of Alabama systems. And he brought our program into Alabama because they were having some challenges with fraternity and sorority kids. And then he's taught it in high school and colleges, continues to it to this day. And he said, you know, one of our biggest problems is our 4-point plus kids in some regard are our least resilient kids.
Yeah.
Because what mom and dad have done is that they've protected them from everything so that they can make those 4 points. So they haven't experienced failure. They haven't experienced difficulty because everybody's protecting them. So now they get away to college and everybody else they're competing against has a 4 point or something about there. Then a kid gets a C, you know, and we were working with kids with him, and the kid says, I've got to kill myself. I can never go back home. I got a C.
Yeah.
Because he never made less than an A in high school. So I'm using that as just one of the examples of the challenges that this generation of kids are facing. And as I work with schools, since COVID, they're dealing with problems and issues they've never dealt with before. I mean, I could take time, which I won't go into, and cover a lot of the issues. But our whole goal is to come in, take strong life values that should be being taught at home. And now the schools are saying, we've got to do it because if kids have major mental health issues, they're not focusing. They're not interested in making A's or 4 point, and they're having to deal with these huge problems in the schools. So our goal then in the next several years is to take the Ambassador of Compassion program. We've done this for 12 years. We have incredible measurements in terms of life-changing things. And I'm working with business guys and companies across the country, and they're saying, man, we're having trouble getting employees. We're struggling with good employees. We're struggling with people taking responsibility. What's going to happen to our country?
Yeah.
And so our kids are the future of our country. And we have a plan. If you're familiar at all with Malcolm Gladwell's book, Tipping Point, He said that if you can get 6% of a group really committed to that over time, that 6% could change the whole group. Well, a million high school kids happens to be 8% of the high school kids in America. So our goal is to put in the next 1 to 2 years, a million kids through the program. And I haven't even covered what the program is, but we're talking about a program designed to really help change kids' lives, help them come to grips with the real issues of life and start making basic decisions. For real quick, for example, the LIFE program. I'll use that as an example. LS for labor, kind of unique concept. If you want to succeed in life, you need to work.
Yeah.
So then we help kids think through what do I want to do later on? And then influence is huge, good influences and bad influences. And I work in a lot of the Title I schools out here, and you got gangs everywhere around those kids. So these kids get into gangs, you know, so when they go into that, they go into their journal and say, who's been a positive influence in your life? Well, it might be mom and dad or a teacher or a friend or a grandparent. Who are the negatives? They usually have two or three times more on those. Then we say, well, the positive influences in your life help you achieve your goals and dreams. And the kids will say, oh, yeah. Then what about all these negative influences? Well, they, no, I never thought about it before. So then we go in and help them. How do you get rid of those negative influences? And how do you change? And where do you find positive influences? And then the F is forgiveness. And of course, we're dealing with, there's a lot of research out that if you stay angry with people all your life, you're going to have diseases later in your life that could shorten your life. So learning to forgive everything from parents to other people is critical. And this has been a really big deal. And then the E for us is experiences. We start off, negative experiences don't have to destroy your life. And we're dealing with a lot of kids that have had a lot of negative experiences. So we start with a powerful 2-hour training program. Then the kids go through 10 weeks. They're in small groups. And then we train the people and they really get in and they start talking to each other. Now they come to grips and they've got to take a project to help change their city. And now we're beginning to work on getting businesses, city leaders and the schools working together so our kids can start helping maybe rebuild compassion in America in their community.
Dave, thank you. That's incredible. Ambassadors of compassion. And I think it's needed now more than ever because we got kids, as you said, that haven't been taught to persevere facing things that require perseverance. Dave Hanna, thank you so much for your time today, brother. And thank you for what you've done. A fascinating story. And thanks to all of you for joining us on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast.